Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Charvette Mitchell, the host of the Charvette Mitchell Radio Show. We're so glad you tuned in today right here on Blog Talk Radio, where our goal is to motivate, excite, and influence. And I'm telling you, we have another wonderful, fabulous show lined up for you today. The topic of the show is called Issues That Face Our Community. We have two different segments we're going to be bringing to you, so we want you to stay tuned and listen to this wonderful show. Hey, check us out every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, same place, right here on Blog Talk Radio. We appreciate all of our listeners from all across the world wide web. Ladies and gentlemen, again, I hope you're having a fabulous week, and we're going to go ahead and jump right into our first segment. I have Dr. Pamela Foster, the author of Is There a Bomb in Black America? She is on the line now. Dr. Foster, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Ms. Mitchell. Glad to be here.
We are glad to have you. Ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Foster before we jump into the interview. Dr. Pamela Payne Foster is a preventative medicine and public health physician who currently resides in Montgomery and Tuscaloosa, Alabama. She is Deputy Director of the Institute for Rural Health Research at the University of Alabama. She has worked most of her career in the field of minority health through academic community partnerships, serving both African American and Latino communities within and near Long Island, New York, Atlanta, Georgia, Washington, D.C., and now Alabama. She is married to William Foster Jr., a social worker, and in 2006, they founded a nonprofit organization called AFRAM South, Inc., a culturally based educational and health resource center focused on human and health development issues in African American communities, particularly in the South. Dr. Foster challenges the African American community to begin to become more knowledgeable and more empowered to end HIV/AIDS in their communities. Again, Dr. Foster, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so let's kind of level set and kind of dispel some myths about HIV and AIDS. So do only homosexuals or those that shoot up drugs, are those the only ones that can get HIV?
No, that's a common myth, Ms. Mitchell. I think that started because when AIDS first came around in the early 80s,
mm-hmm.
It was sort of tagged as a white gay man's disease. So I think that is still stuck in the minds of a lot of people. And we shift now 25 years later since the early 80s,
mm-hmm.
and it's really more of a disease of people of color now, but both men and women, so both males and females. And females who are getting it at an increasingly increased rates are getting it through heterosexual sex, you know, so having sex with a man. So that sort of shoots down that old myth of it only being in white gay men. So we really have to kind of rethink and look at what's going on with the statistics since the early 80s, 1980s. Mm-hmm.
And should we believe in any of the conspiracy theories out there? You know, there are so many movies that came out, either it came from monkeys or it came from this, or, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
Right, and I mean, most recently, this whole issue with Jeremiah Wright talking about it being, you know, made by the government as a conspiracy against black people. You know, I think that there's nothing wrong with us being a little paranoid. There are things in history that have pointed to conspiracies against black people. For example, people always go back to the Tuskegee syphilis experiment, which I'm right here in Alabama, so it's really close to heart here in Alabama. And that did happen. We know that's the longest non-therapeutic clinical trial that ever happened in U.S. history, from 1932 to 1972. So some things are really real, and I think, you know, some of the things that have happened in history sort of make us paranoid. But what it's done is sort of covered up the fact that we do need to be doing prevention at the same time. What it does is sort of, it just puts us in the frame of mind to only think about the conspiracies and not really ways to protect ourselves against it. The theories seem to be going more towards it coming from monkeys and, you know, some in certain parts of the world, not just Africa, but other parts of the world as well. So, but I think what happens is people get so focused on the conspiracy theories, they don't think about prevention strategies, and deal with the facts.
Exactly. And so there are a lot of statistics that are out about the local rates around new cases of HIV/AIDS being 50%. Can you talk about some of the statistics?
The statistics generally are, if we look at new cases of HIV in this country now, nationally, around 50% of new cases are in African Americans. So if you compare that to how much, you know, percentage of how much we are in the country, we're only about 12-13% of total ethnic racial groups in the country, and we're making up 50% of new cases, which is, you know, a great disparity. And even if we look at some local areas like Washington, D.C., for example, has high rates because we have high populations of African Americans in Washington, D.C., and even states in the South like Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi have high rates. And we also know that one of the trends that's happening is it used to be more prevalent in big cities.
Right.
But now we're seeing a trend in even small rural towns, and particularly in the rural South, it's really increasing. So, for example, in Alabama, of all new cases of HIV, 70% of them are in African Americans, which is very disparate. Yes. And really points to the fact that we have a real crisis going on.
Absolutely.
And I think most are really not aware of it. I mean, the other thing we point to is that the government is not even aware of it. And you look at just the trend in some of the vice presidential and presidential debates.
Right.
The candidates are not really aware of what's going on. They're very foggy when they give their answers dealing with African-American populations. They sort of shift over to global issues and really don't really know what's going on here in their own jurisdiction.
And so that brings up a good point, the global issue. Is there a shift in concern from the U.S. to Africa, or should there be? Or?
Well, I mean, the if you look globally, HIV/AIDS over the last 25 years has increased all over the world. So it's definitely a global issue. It's not just here in the U.S. And if you look at all parts of the world, sub-Saharan Africa is definitely heavily affected, you know, when you look at the numbers.
Right.
When you look globally across the world, really people of color of all African diasporas are really carrying the heaviest burden of the disease. So that means here in the U.S., African Americans, in the Caribbeans, for example, countries like Jamaica have high burden. Brazil, those countries, and Africa as well. So I don't want to downplay what's happening globally.
Right.
But I do think that we have to also pay attention to what's going on here as well.
phenomenal. Ladies and gentlemen, if you just tuned in, you're listening to the Charvette Mitchell Radio Show, and we have our segment going concerning issues that impact our communities, and I am interviewing Dr. Foster, Pamela Foster, the author of Is There a Balm in Black America? So let's talk about are we talking about women, men, young
yes.
men, older people? What are the age ranges we're dealing with?
Well, basically, the largest age groups are in the mid-range, so between 20 and 40.
Okay.
That's why if you look at some statistics, they'll talk about, in some cities and some areas, it is the number one killer of black adults between 25 and 40s in the 40s range. So that's an important age group. But, of course, the younger age group is important. You know, we have to make the distinction between HIV and AIDS. So there is like a long span, it can be a long span, between the time somebody's infected until when they get AIDS. What we term AIDS is really having some symptoms
okay.
where their immune system sort of acts to really be deficient. So that can be 10 to 20 years
wow.
when a person could go from HIV to AIDS. So it's important for us when we're looking at the adolescent years that a person could actually be infected in their adolescent years and then it show up in their 20s, 30s, 10, 15 years later. So the focus tends to be on really looking at young adults,
mm-hmm.
but we also don't want to leave out another blip that occurs after the age of 50. So because there's not as much awareness that people over the age of 50 can get infected because
right.
they have some of the same health behaviors as young people, unprotected sex, for example, is one, not wearing a condom during sexual activity, they're just as much at risk. So that's another age group that we're really kind of getting the word out and targeting to really become to be more aware and educated about the disease really affecting people over 50.
Wow, and so I think that's a great point, that this can hit anybody.
It really
can.
This can
impact anybody. And as I was preparing for the show, I remember probably about 3 years ago, an email came across my desk from a government committee,
mm-hmm.
if you will, within Virginia. They were hosting a community or a town hall type focus
mm-hmm.
group.
Mm-hmm.
concerning HIV and AIDS. And
mm-hmm.
so I had never been to one before. So I said, I'm going to go. And I'm thinking it'll be a big auditorium.
Mm-hmm.
I'll sit in the back, kind of listening and leave. When I got
mm-hmm.
there, it was a very small setting,
mm-hmm.
probably 8 to 10 people and two
mm-hmm.
facilitators.
Mm-hmm.
All of the people that were at the table, 8 to 10, including myself, all African American,
mm-hmm.
Diverse group. There was a young guy. There was two older people. There
mm-hmm.
was a heavy set person.
Mm-hmm.
There was just a diversity
mm-hmm.
in the group that was represented. And we talked about HIV/AIDS and the impacts to the community. At the end of that session, I found
mm-hmm.
out that everyone at the table, other than myself,
mm-hmm.
HIV or AIDS.
Right.
And it really was an eye opener to me because again, you can't just sit back and say, oh, I can look at somebody and tell if they have.
Right.
I mean, it was every shape, every height, every
right.
young, every age.
Right.
It was
right.
amazing.
Right. The other thing, I guess, from your point is that where were the people?
Right.
Where were the people? I mean, it amazes us. We often have town hall meetings here in the
mm-hmm.
South. And I think I moved to the South from New York. And it's very much a difference in sort of the advocacy around HIV here
right.
in the South. And what I found was that people didn't even want to go to the sessions because they didn't even want to be affiliated with HIV. Now, this is just hearing information and learning for themselves.
Right.
So there's still a great stigma attached to even getting to know more information. I mean, that's really what spurred me on with the book because I said, I really got to have some kind of tool to really get people to kind of open up and even want to have information, to correct information about prevention and
Absolutely.
Really kind of, get spurred on doing something about the problem.
Great.
So that
so
really
talk.
Was the reason why I
okay.
got into the, even writing the book.
Great. So let's talk about the book, Is There a Balm in Black America? What is the purpose? What can the book do for people, for communities?
Well, what I did with the book was just sort of took some of the work I was already doing in the community.
Mm-hmm.
I did a lot of talks at churches. And usually when I would do a talk about HIV at the church, I believe that as health educators and health promoters, we have to sort of talk in the language that people can really understand.
Yes.
So when you're talking to church people, their language is scripture.
Right.
So I always started each talk with a scripture and sort of tied in spirituality and health into the whole concept of education as well as telling stories. So that's pretty much where I was coming from with the book. It's easy to read. It follows. It's very conversational. It's not in real high-tech medical terminology,
mm-hmm.
which I think scares some people about the whole idea about HIV/AIDS. So I do it in that way. I have a couple of two contributors. One is a legislator here in Alabama who's very active in HIV/AIDS prevention because her son died of AIDS.
Wow.
And so she tells her story from a very personal point of view. Her name is Representative Laura Hall. She's a representative from Huntsville, Alabama. And I also have a contributor, a person who started out being my editor for the book, got so excited.
Right.
He had been an AIDS educator. He kept a journal while he was doing that work, and so some of his journal entries are in there. And in addition to those stories, we also tell some vignettes and some stories really that are based on real cases. Like the most common, the most popular one I have is a story of Emma, who's a 76-year-old who is a missionary in the church,
yeah.
And contracted the disease really from a sex worker that comes to the nursing home on the, you know, once a month during pay time. And these are real. This is based on actual cases. And then we also, in addition to the stories, have discussion questions at the end of each chapter. So the idea is to really sort of do some real in-depth discussions, particularly around issues like homosexuality. The book is sort of, it's targeted to the entire community, but I pay special attention to the church because I really think that they really play a real key leadership role in really handling this disease in our community. So,
absolutely.
And particularly with issues like homosexuality, sexuality in the church, and how we really sort of kind of begin to discuss those issues. I know we have scripture that talks about, you know, it's a sin, but how do we go beyond that to really kind of get at really getting at this disease and not ignoring it? So that's really the book in a nutshell. So
okay,
it's
and
gotten great response so far, sort of word of mouth here in Alabama. So just trying to get the word out and to use it really as a tool to help both educate and empower the community.
Phenomenal. And if someone would like to purchase the book, how could they purchase the book?
It is currently online because it's self-published.
Okay.
Lulu.com, www.lulu.com. But it's also on Amazon.com and all the online bookstores like Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, and so forth. So they can get it basically online. I have it in a couple of bookstores in Tuscaloosa, EKH, Christian Bookstore, Shrine of the Black Madonna in Atlanta.
Okay.
And just a few, and they can go on my website to see where to publish it as well, where to purchase it as well.
Great. And
can
give
I
us
give
your
you
website?
That website?
Absolutely.
I'd love to. It's www.ppayne.foster.com.
Great. All right. So you alluded to a little bit about, you know, not just kind of dealing with the issues and not glossing over it. So
right.
What are some very reliable, scientifically proven, evidence-based ways to prevent HIV/AIDS?
Right. Well, there are two major ones. We know the two major risk factors are sexual contact.
Mm-hmm.
Using a condom, latex condom, correctly, is one of the scientifically proven ways. One of the things we found from research is that people don't use condoms consistently. They don't use them every time, and they don't use them correctly. They use different lubricants and really don't know how to use condoms. And the question is, where does one learn how to use a condom correctly?
Right. True.
When I asked that question,
right.
I asked, do they learn in school? No. Do they learn at home? No. Do they learn at church? No. Where do they learn? From their friends, which is usually the wrong information. So that's one issue for really scientifically evidence-based. We call them risk reduction strategies.
Okay.
So, of course, when I'm talking to audiences of young people, abstinence is definitely a surefire way to prevent this disease. But in reality, we know that a lot of kids are sexually active by the time they graduate from high school. So we have to have additional messages and tools to prevent this disease. So condom use is the other way. And then the third is for those who contract the disease by IV drug use, intravenous drug use. There are several strategies that are being used in several cities. One is needle exchange programs.
Mm-hmm.
So a person who is an addict can go into a facility and exchange their needle for a clean needle. Or the other one is using bleach and really cleaning the apparatus that they use to inject drugs, what we call the works. So those are proven strategies that have been found to be scientifically ways to decrease the transmission.
Okay.
Many more of these harm reduction strategies have been used in European countries and other places. Much more difficult here because they're very controversial, of course, and sort of tagged with a very moral message. But as the disease gets worse and worse and worse, we're going to have to kind of deal with reality.
Mm-hmm.
And let me just say that the sexually transmitted disease issue that we're having in this country, there was a recent paper by CDC that talked about black girls having, that they looked at having 50% of the girls that they surveyed had an STD, like
mm-hmm.
chlamydia, like syphilis, like gonorrhea, and that increases your risk of contracting HIV/AIDS as well. So
and those are the ones that admitted it or reported it.
Those were what girls who reported it. I think they looked at about 800 girls, and the range was, I think, 16 to 25, something like that.
Okay.
So real data.
Okay. So what can, if a person says, okay, what can I do to eradicate this disease in my community? What can one person do?
Well, one of the other strategies is to really know what your HIV/AIDS status is, HIV status is. Many, and we think that a lot of the numbers that we have for people who are infected are very underrated because a lot of people are positive and don't know they're positive because they have no symptoms. So they're walking around positive and spreading the disease to other people. So one thing that everybody can really do is to get tested and encourage others to get tested so that everybody really knows what their status is.
Okay.
The second thing is to really get as much information as you can about this disease. It's whenever I go out, I really do promotions on the book or really do talks. Most people haven't kept up with what's going on currently with HIV/AIDS. They have no idea that it's a major issue in our community.
Right.
So they've got to read and really keep up with what's going on. And it may not be in the mainstream media. I mean, I suggest Black AIDS Institute. They have wonderful reports, and they sort of keep up with what's going on. Balm and Gilead is another excellent resource. And, in fact, in the book, I have resources as well.
Okay.
There are probably local AIDS agencies where you live. So get that information and kind of keep up with what's going on. And then third, just really get involved and begin to educate others as you learn and get more people involved in this whole struggle to end AIDS in our community.
Well, Dr. Pamela Foster, thank you so much for joining the Charvette Mitchell Radio Show.
Thank you so much.
We appreciate you. So glad to have you again, the author of Is There a Balm in Black America?
Yes.
Can you give your website one more time?
Yes, my website is www.paynefoster.com, and they can also purchase the book on lulu.com, lulu.com.
Great. Thank you
Thank you
so much again.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Ladies and gentlemen, we are going to continue with this segment on issues that impact and face our community. In the next half of the show, we will be talking to Bride of Christ Incorporated with Director Reverend Doreen Cephas and two of the board members. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we will be back to the show.
Hello, everyone. My name is Donna McKeithen, and I am founder of Exodus International Group. We are a tour and meeting planning company located in Alexandria, Virginia. We provide quality, cost-effective vacations, cruises, and tour packages, as well as historical and educational programs for groups and individuals. Also, call us if you need international meeting assistance for your business or church. We are your cultural connection to the continent of Africa. Visit places like Ghana and Senegal and the Gambia and Mali and South Africa. Also travel to Europe and Asia and the Caribbean and South America. And we offer many other destinations around the world. Interested in international business or coach class tickets? Give us a call. Our staff has over 20 years of experience in the tourism and travel industry. Visit our website at www.xisandxrayodusint.com or call us at 703-971-9660. Thank you.
Dion, I have imparted in you a witty and much-needed gift, an invention, and you shall go forth, and you shall call it the Lockdown. Now go, spread it amongst our people.
They say that people with dreadlock hair have no place in corporate America. They say if your hair is long, you're either immature or rebellious. I say there's a subtle beauty in restraint. We must learn to lock it down. To lock it down.
Lock the lock down. Lock the lock down. Lock the lock down. Lock it down. Lock the lock down. Lock the lock down. Lock the lock down. Lock it down. Lock the lock down. Lock the lock down. Lock the lock down. Lock it down. Lock the lock down.
Does your church or ministry have a website? Are you a local artist or author that has an established web presence? If you answered no to any of these questions, you're letting countless opportunities pass you by. Hi, I'm Charvette Mitchell. Mitchell Productions was created with your needs in mind. We will provide you with stylish and economical online marketing solutions. From email marketing to your own website, Mitchell Productions caters to ministries, nonprofits, small businesses, and special events. Check out our portfolio at Mitchell-Productions.com. In today's world, a website is not a luxury, it's a necessity. And Mitchell Productions can create your website in a stylish manner at a very economical price. Don't let business, customers, or new congregation members pass you by. Visit Mitchell Productions today at www.Mitchell-Productions.com. Let us showcase your organization to the world.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the show. This is Charvette Mitchell. I am the host of the Charvette Mitchell Radio Show, broadcasting right here on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, if you missed any portion of the show or any of the interviews, no problem. All of the shows are saved online as a podcast, and you can go back and listen to the show as many times as you would like, and also you could send a link to a friend. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Don't forget we're on the air every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Same time, same place. And I'm so excited to continue with today's segment about issues that face our community. And we have on the line with us now some representatives from Bride of Christ Incorporated. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
Hi. And who do we have on the line so far?
I'm Doreen Cephas, and I'm the Executive Director of Bride of Christ Ministries.
Great. We're glad to have you, Reverend Cephas.
Thank you. Thank you.
And it's Brenda Booker online.
Great. Brenda, thank you for joining the show, one of the Board of Directors for the organization.
Yes, I'm Director of Volunteerism.
Great. We are so glad to have you guys. And we're going to tell our audience a little bit about your organization, and then we're going to jump into the interview.
Okay.
So Bride of Christ Incorporated is a nonprofit 501c3 entity that is dedicated to really providing temporary safe havens for abused and battered women and their children, and for providing support and counseling and training to help them achieve self-reliance while growing spiritually and emotionally to start a new beginning. Bride plans to have several homes strategically placed throughout the Richmond metropolitan area because there is a huge need for beds to accommodate the growing demand. Abused women and their children need a sanctuary where they can go to escape the violence and feel safe. Bride strongly believes that love should not hurt. Again, we're so glad to have you on the show.
Yes, thank you for having us.
Great.
Thank you.
Oh, you're quite welcome. So let's go ahead and start out. Reverend Cephas, tell us, what is Bride of Christ Incorporated? How did it get started?
It was started in July of 2004. It was basically a vision from God, who had given me instructions on creating a organizational ministry for the sole purpose of having transitional homes for abused and battered women and their children.
Yes.
At the time, wasn't quite clear exactly how that would come about, but he pretty much gave me directions. He selected a board of directors, names of people that he thought would carry out the mission, and I just went to each one and contacted them and told them the message, and most of them was willing just to step up to the plate. So we were really glad to have them do that.
Phenomenal. And so Bride of Christ, it's a very spiritual and powerful name.
Yes,
how did you
yes.
come up with that name?
Well, the vision, the particular name was done. I had went to a church service, and they had a service which was called Songs of Solomon.
Mm-hmm.
And to make a long story short, Songs of Solomon, when they break it down, when you go to biblical studies, it really means Bride of Christ. Bride of Christ means the church or the members of the church, God's people.
Mm-hmm.
And as I began to learn the Word of God, is that God wanted church people to help people,
mm-hmm.
not just government,
mm-hmm.
but people from God to help people of God. So we, and of course, non-believers as well. So that's how the name was given basically by him. It was confirmed, as he always does things. And,
yes.
We went forward to set up the organization.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Brenda, turning to you, how does Bride of Christ operate right now?
Well, Bride of Christ operate with several board members,
okay.
and an advisory board. We operate through grants, fundraisers, and just until we open our first home.
All right. And that is, tell us about the home that you're going to be opening. Explain a little bit more about that.
Hopefully we'll be opening the home the first of next year.
Okay.
We are doing now creating the funding necessary to facilitate that. We do things, fun things like fundraisers and conferences, and that would be our portion of creating that funding. But hopefully we would have the donations from the community and also an outreach program from each church. If each church would just give us a nominal fee, we would be able to support, go beyond supporting the organization. No particular member would ever own the houses. It would always be an entity of Bride of Christ Ministries.
Okay.
So it's nothing that we could ever do, one person could ever do to own that. It would always be in the hands of the organization. So I always like to make sure people understand that. This entity should go on just like a YWCA,
okay.
Salvation Army, or whatever. It'll go on forever. No particular name is attached to the organization. So even though I'm executive director today, as I cease to be, there would be other people that would come along and run this organization.
Phenomenal.
And it could be next year that they run this organization. So We just want, this is God's work, this is His vision, and all we are doing is just being obedient servants of His to perform what He wants to do.
Phenomenal. And tell us why you find it so important, and definitely it is, to really help those that may be dealing with domestic violence, the women and the children in particular.
Well, usually they are the least protected in this type of situation. Usually what happens is that the mom is usually the one that's kept with, who stays with the child, and it's all about the children.
Yes.
He said it's all about the children. It's not about the parent. The parent can make a decision of whether or not they can leave, but if they don't have a place to go, that decision is to be maintained where they are. So
right.
We're just hoping that good people will see that this is God's work, and they would support people who have no, you know, it's about control. Domestic
right.
violence is about control. It's not about love. And when someone is in that situation who's trying to control you, you have no sources of recovery. You just they control the money. They control
right.
every aspect of your life. So in order for you, and usually what happens is they separate you from your family
right.
and your friends. So when you're ready to move forward, you don't have that support system that's willing to help you, because domestic violence, a person who's an abuser, is a calculated way of control, and it happens over a period of years. So it's mental control, it's physical
right.
control, it's financial control. So what we're hoping to do is say, when this person have that opportunity to move beyond that and have the strength that we need, that we will come out and help them. Now, we're only going to take the severe cases.
Okay.
YMCA has tons of women that's been abused. But we want the ones who, if they go back, that's the end of them. We want to stop that from happening. We want
right.
them to say, look, you have a place to come, get nurtured, you know, have the Lord, you know, talk to you, have people who's godly come and support you. So when you get out of this situation, all you can say is the Lord sent me good people to help me.
Yes.
Not social services that will not teach you God's principles.
Yes.
Not, you know, something else. But when they leave that home, they said they were good God servant. I want the children to say, I want to be like them.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I want that. I see God's work at hand. And so we're trying to teach, we want to teach them that God is what He say. He's merciful. He's good. He's a rescuer. He's everything that we ever need if we just depend on Him.
Amen.
But if people would not help, how can you see God in a situation?
Okay.
So we are praying that the audience would support us so we can make this vision of God, not ours,
right.
come to fruition, because times are getting worse. People are into drugs. If a man is on drugs, he's not going to be concerned with his family's welfare.
Right.
His only agenda is to get his next high. And so even if his family is at stake, he will not pay the rent. He will cause arguments within the home in order to get the money that she brings in.
Mm.
And the children are the ones that are the victims, the true victims. Mm. So we're asking that if you have a heart to serve God, we want to make this happen. We've been at this for 4 years.
Okay.
And trying to get the money, because we need money. Everyone needs money to
right.
do what they need to do.
It makes the world go round, right?
It makes the world go round. And so we can get people to just donate. We do not ask for a particular amount. We ask, God said to ask them for a token of love. The word is token of love. It's
uh-huh.
in the Bible. Token of love, that they could support this organization. And we promise you, we got IRS, we got God, we got everybody overlooking our shoulders.
All right.
To make us good stewards. We are a organizational ministry. I mean, we are bold because we went to the IRS saying Bride of Christ, which sometimes they'll turn you away because
right.
you are a Christian entity.
Right. faith-based.
But they
right.
said, but we got our 501c3 organization in record time. We got it in 8 months.
Wow.
They don't even look at it for 6 months. We made corrections. We resubmitted it. They approved us. God is so good.
Yes, he
He's
is.
He's so wonderful. And most people who apply for a 501c3, it takes them 2 or 3 years in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
But God was good because he wrote the program. It wasn't I. It was not I. It was him who gave, because I had no prior knowledge of how a the programs would be set up. He had
right.
to tell me.
Wow.
And all I'm saying is that these great, wonderful servants, the ladies that's with me and have been with us, have worked diligently to make this happen. And they are hard workers. They are, to me, the best in their field.
All right.
They are wonderful. Brenda and Claudine. We have Brenda Booker, who's, like I said, she's advisory board member.
Yes.
She's going to create the volunteers. We got Joyce Charity. She keeps our records. She's the secretary of the organization. We have Carla Randall, who keeps our financial books, making sure the IRS know all our money. And we have.
And I believe
Claudine
Carla may have joined the show. Carla, are you on the line?
No, this is Claudine.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry,
Claudine.
Thank you for
Claudine.
Claudine. Claudine. Yes.
Yes.
Thank
How
you.
Are you?
We're doing great. And ladies and gentlemen, if you just tuned in, you're listening to the Charvette Mitchell Radio Show, and we are interviewing ladies that are representative directors, senior directors, executive directors of Bride of Christ Incorporated. And ladies, please tell us, how can someone contribute? If they're listening, how can they contribute?
Claudine?
Well, I'd like to answer that.
All right.
They can contribute through various sponsorship, corporateship, through the church, businesses, or just individual donations.
Okay. And where would they send a donation? And while they're getting that information, they do have a empowerment conference that's coming up this Saturday, May 17th, from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. So we'll want to hear a little bit about what you all have on the lineup.
Okay, sure. Going back to where they can send a donation to Bride of Christ Incorporated, P.O. Box 27964, Richmond, Virginia, 23261. And it is tax deductible, so once we receive your donation, we will return with a receipt, tax deductible receipt.
All right, outstanding.
Our Empowerment Conference.
Yes, this Saturday. Tell us about it.
Yeah, this is one of our highlight of the year. It's an annual event, annual fundraiser, and it's going to incorporate businesses, vendors, ministry, arts, entertainment, just a whole slew of different topics, and we're going to be at the Richmond Times Dispatch Building at 8460 Times Dispatch Boulevard in Mechanicsville, Virginia, from 1 to 5 p.m. So the public is free to come and interact with our businesses and listen to some of our gospel music, and we're going to have ministers, sermonettes, and praise dancers. And
all right.
Yeah.
Great. And it's free to the public, and that's also an opportunity for people to give. If they'd like to make a donation, they can do that at that time at Empowerment Conference coming Saturday, May 17th.
That's correct.
From 1 to 5. And we have about one more minute left in the show. Ladies, any final thoughts that you would like to share with our audience?
Well, I'll just like to say, as far as volunteering, we're always looking and seeking for volunteers.
Okay.
We want to build a strong volunteer base, and if they're willing to spare a few hours a week or a few hours a month, we will be happy to use them, put them to work for Bride of Christ.
Great.
And another thing,
I hope I didn't cut you off, that I would want to say is that we have the opportunity to have sponsorship from businesses. We want outreach program ministries through the church. They can support us in that way. And then some of our fundraising activities, additional fundraising activities, they can support us with those. For example, have a trip being planned to New York, and of course it's fun kind of a 2-day trip that's coming up in August, I believe. But to support us in those kinds of endeavors, as well as sponsor us on, say, a month-to-month basis, or
right,
however you can do that. And I could go on with that, but I'm afraid I might talk too long.
So that's phenomenal. So a shopping trip coming up in August. So we love to shop, ladies and gentlemen. Everyone can support things like that. So in Reverend Cephas, any last thoughts from you?
Yeah, just adding to the August event, it's going to be, we're going to see The Lion King.
Okay.
And go shopping and go eating at Sylvia's and go do all the fun things we do. But we just want to say thank you so much for having us on your show. And I just know God is real pleased with just us coming in and letting people know what he's trying to do in this community.
Well, you are quite welcome, and we were so glad to have you on the Charvette Mitchell Radio Show.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that wraps up another edition of the Charvette Mitchell Radio Show. Remember to tune in every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where we will bring you motivational, inspiring, and exciting guests and shows. Check back with us next Tuesday at 6 p.m., same time, same place. We're going to take the show out with a little bit of music and a few more commercials, and we hope that you have a wonderful, blessed week.
The members of the Black Business Space online community have come together in a unified effort to build our brands, our businesses, and connect with you in a beneficial manner. So we're taking the show on the road. We're packing our bags, filling them with UNITY, unity, and through the BBS Value Tour, we're bringing the value of community to a city near you. First stop, New York, for the product launch of the Lockdown by inventor and BBS member DeShalimar, May 10, 2008, at the National Black Theater. Next stop, the 4th Annual Los Angeles Black Book Expo on June 14th. Family, friends, and business community, please join in. Commitment, honor, value, courtesy. Just a gentle reminder about the way to do business and to treat one another. For more information, visit us online at www.bbsvaluetour.com or call us toll-free 1-888-846-9811.
Has God inspired you to share his word through books or music? Are you seeking help with marketing and promoting your work? Well, look no further. Kingdom Publishing Group Incorporated, the area's leading publisher, producer, and promoter of Christian books and music, is here to meet your needs. We offer a full range of book publishing and music production services, as well as customized marketing packages and representation. In essence, from conception to delivery, we help you get your God-inspired work out to the world. To find out more about Kingdom Publishing Group and the services we offer, visit us on the web at www.kingdompublishing.org. That's www.kingdompublishing.org. Or to schedule your no-cost consultation, call us at 804-515-9100. That's 804-515-9100. Kingdom Publishing Group Incorporated, helping you get God's word and his work out to the world.